Bill Littlefield, welcome to the Bookshelf Conversations.
Thank you.
We're here today mainly to talk about your novel, your 35 plus year old novel, Prospect. See, that's the thing about the bookshelf. Books of any age are welcome here. So,
oh, that's the great thing about books. They hang around.
So let's talk about, well, first of all, people should know you from Only a Game. The NPR program, which I really miss. It was a constant podcast for me when it was available, and
thank
very,
you.
very sorry to see it go. So when did you decide you wanted to write this novel, and why?
Well, when I was working for WBUR, actually well before Only a Game started in 1993, I used to do commentaries for BUR and for NPR's Morning Edition. So I was always looking for possibilities, things to write about. And at one point, I picked up on something that used to be an annual event up here in Massachusetts, and that was a Major League Baseball tryout camp that they would have out at Holy Cross in Worcester. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to go out to the tryout camp and just see what kind of people showed up, thinking that they might like a Major League scout to look at their baseball abilities. And I met a guy out there named Lenny Marullo. And Lenny was an infielder for the Cubs back in the 40s. And had an interesting career in the major leagues, not a long career. And when that career was over, he ended up scouting for the Cubs and then much later scouting for the Major League Scouting Bureau. And as luck would have it, this particular tryout camp was rained out. And so fairly shortly after it was supposed to start, Lenny announced to the people who'd showed up that it wasn't going to happen because it was too wet. And he and I sat in a dugout at the ball field in Worcester and just got to know each other and chatted. And it turned out it was the beginning of what would become a good friendship over some years. And at some point, it occurred to me that a baseball scout would have great stories to tell and might make a terrific narrator for a novel. And I thought, you know, if I was writing a novel and a scout was the narrator, every time I couldn't think what should happen next in the novel, I'd just have the scout tell a story. And that would be a way of keeping the thing going. And that was the genesis of Prospect. It began that way. And then fairly shortly after I started writing it, the character of Louise Brown became so insistent in my mind that I gave her 50% of the narration. I just, her voice was so constant and present that I couldn't resist letting her have half the storytelling opportunity.
So it's a story of Pete Essie, who is the scout, who
right.
is older. He's in a nursing home or a retirement home. And Louise is his caregiver until a fire at the home causes several clients to relocate, and she takes him in to her own home. Now, when you wrote this, you were obviously much younger.
Yes.
How is it writing? Well, you're writing in two different voices. You're writing in the voice of an older man and a woman. So how does your mind go into those different personalities?
Well, I had the advantage of some experience with retirement homes because both my grandmothers had been in retirement homes. So I knew something about the feel and the sounds and sort of what they were like. And I think it was something that's kind of interesting. Actually, in the novel, Louise is almost as old as Pete. But she doesn't acknowledge that age should slow her down or change her character. Whereas Pete, at the beginning of the novel, is ready to give up. He's had it, and he's ready to just quietly pass away. And of course, the energy of the novel is Louise convincing him that that's not the way it should be.
And Louise convinces him that she has a grandnephew who is a marvelous baseball player.
Right.
That kind of injects a new life, although it starts out reluctantly in the scout, but it gives him a new project to work on. And
Ultimately, yes.
now, one of the things that I thought of, obviously I read this book a long time ago and then I just reread it prior to our conversation. It made me think of Trouble with the Curve, the movie with the Clint Eastwood as an older scout who's battling not only his oncoming age and the deformities that brings with it, and the new method of scouting. He is a dinosaur. He is no longer,
Right.
but it's those dinosaurs that manage, in this case, to survive and prove, I guess, I don't know if usefulness is the right word, but it gives him a purpose, and I think he appreciates that more than he lets on.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I don't think one of the things that's kind of interesting about this was a conversation that I had with my editor at that time. It was a wonderful editor who was working for Houghton Mifflin at the time, named Dick Todd. And as he got the last couple of chapters of the novel, he said, I have to say this as an editor. Do you think maybe you want Jack Brown to hit a home run and win the World Series and have that be the end of the novel? And I said, no, Dick, I don't, because the climax of the novel happens when Jack Brown and Pete are talking about Louise at the end of the novel, and the reader gets a sense of how powerfully Louise has influenced both of their lives. And he said, well, that's okay with me. I don't want to mess with your vision of the novel, but you have to recognize that when they make a movie, Jack Brown will hit a home run to win the World Series at the end of the movie. And I said, well, in that case, they'll screw up the novel. And he said, no. He said, you just walk over to the bookshelf when that happens and you put your hand on the book and you say, they never laid a glove on it. So unfortunately, they haven't made the movie. the option has been sold a number of times, but the movie has never been made. But I'm sure that they will screw it up if they make
Of course, that was the
it.
complaint about the movie version of The Natural,
Yes.
and a lot of people were a lot of people who were into the book, let's say, felt it was unfaithful to the book, and it
Yeah,
totally changed
well,
the story.
the book is a masterpiece. And a complicated and ambitious masterpiece. The movie is great fun, but it's not particularly complicated. And hey, you get to watch Robert Redford be an old baseball player. It's kind of
Who is a much better athlete than, let's say, William Bendix in the Babe Ruth story?
fun. Well, yeah, so that's a low bar.
What kind of writer are you? And by that I mean, do you agonize over every sentence? Do you agonize over every word, or do you just go with it, look over it a couple of times? What's your process?
It's different with different things that I write. I mean, I wrote for radio for 25 and 8 is, 35, almost 35 years. And you don't have the chance to look over everything too carefully, because there's always something the deadlines are constant and there's always something else that you have to do. With the novels, I'm more careful, and the short stories, I'm more careful, and I put them away for a while and go over them. And I think back when I wrote Prospect, the first thing that I would do every day when I sat down to write was go back to the 3 pages that I'd written the previous day and go over them and see if I could make them a little better before I moved on to try to write the next 3 pages. The process is different for every different project.
And speaking of the process, what medium did you use? I mean, was this like on the cusp of when computers were generally
Was
available,
before
right?
computers. Yeah, no, I had a typewriter, and actually I wrote prospect longhand first, and then typed up the second draft.
So you basically had two drafts?
Well, two drafts, and then, if the editors, the diktat at Houghton would say, what about this? What about that? And I'd horse around with it a little more.
Did you find that your editor was knowledgeable about baseball?
Very.
That must
But
help.
even more important, he was knowledgeable about writing. He was very smart and very careful, and a great partner in that process.
I want to switch over a little bit to talk about another baseball book you were involved in, Fall Classics,
Oh,
which
yeah.
the history of the World Series on the 100th anniversary of the World Series, where you and Richard Johnson served as editors. That's a real who's who of writers in that
Yes,
book.
it is.
And I wonder, do you think, first of all, does the World Series have the same importance now as it did, say, prior to pre-Western expansion?
Well, not to me. I mean, I wouldn't want to answer for anybody else, but to me, there was something quite wonderful about eight teams in each league, and about really when I was a kid, of course, I knew who was on each of those eight teams and followed Willie Mays on an hourly basis. So, yeah, it was a very different kind of experience. I think one of the things that's happened is I've kind of grown away from that kind of attachment over the years. So, yeah, it's not the same experience as it was as a kid.
When you work on a book like Fall Classic, how, I mean, do you use your sections of other writers' work verbatim? Do you change anything? How does that work?
No, we didn't change anything. I think what made that book kind of fun was that Richard Johnson and I brought totally different perspectives to the project. He wanted to have writing about what he thought were the most significant World Series or most significant games in the World Series. And I wanted to have the best writing I could find. So I put stuff in there, for example, by Damon Runyon. I put stuff in there by Jimmy Breslin. I put stuff in there by an excerpt from Eight Men Out, Elliot Aisonoff's book. And he was much more interested in newspaper accounts or historical accounts. And I think that the result was an interesting mix. Unfortunately, while that book was in process, the guy, the editor who had commissioned it, got fired, and the book ended up in the publishing industry. They call those books orphans, and that book really ended up an orphan. It didn't have anybody to really push it or represent it, and it kind of died on the vine.
Well, I think it was, I personally think it was a fine book.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to put together, and I learned some things about certain writers where you'd go to somebody and you'd say, "Hey, that baseball book you wrote was terrific. We'd like to use 5 or 6 pages in our collection here, our anthology." And they'd say, "Oh, yeah, okay, you can do that. I need $2,000 for you to do that," and that was not possible. Elliot Aisonoff's book was a wonderful example. His publisher said wanted some outrageous amount of money for us to use a little bit of Eight Men Out, and I called up Elliot, who was a friend, and I said, "Look, your publisher wants a lot of money, and we don't have it. It's not in the budget. Publisher won't give it to us." And he said, "Be fine." And we got along fine. We used the piece of his writing, and all was well.
Do you think there are writers like that today? I mean, we don't have a Damon Runyon anymore. We don't have a Jimmy Breslin anymore. Who has stepped in to fill their
No,
shoes?
we don't have enough newspapers anymore either.
Of course, yeah.
The whole landscape has changed, obviously, very dramatically. So no, I suppose the answer, and we have Charlie Pierce, who's a wonderful writer and still writes with a kind of wit and voice that characterized the Runyons and Breslins of the world. But no, there aren't a lot of them.
Which is a shame, but I guess that's a product of a generational product where people don't have the, TLDR, too long didn't read mentality,
Yeah,
but they don't want
exactly.
to
I'm
invest
sure that's
in.
part of it. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about Only a Game. That must have been a lot of fun to do.
Oh, it was great fun for many years. Absolutely. First of all, we built it from the beginning, and David Green and Gary Wallach and I put it together. And in the beginning, we had this little tiny room that had been a storage closet, and it had two desks and two chairs and two computers. And there were three of us, which meant somebody had to be out of the room at all times. And frequently it was me out somewhere with a microphone and a kit recording something, and then I would come back and we'd make something of it. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had a great time for many years, and it had it was 25 years. It was a good long run for me, and then when I left, they kept it going for a year and change more.
What were some of your favorites? Stories. Did you find more joy in reporting on lesser known stories rather than the major sports?
Primarily, yes, that was the case. Because if I could find something that other people weren't necessarily aware of or didn't think was significant, that was more fun. I'll give you an example since we're talking about baseball. I was at Fenway Park a couple hours before the game. I was supposed to talk to somebody on the Red Sox team. I can't remember who I had made an arrangement to talk to, but whoever it was, he didn't show up at the time he was supposed to show up. So I went across the field to the visiting dugout, and I think it was the Twins who were in town. And there were a couple old coaches out on the field, and they had a fungo bat and a baseball, and they were hitting baseballs against the wall, the crazy configuration of walls in Fenway Park. And I couldn't really understand what they were doing. It was hard to tell from a distance. And when they came into the dugout, I sat with them and I said, "I'm just curious, what were you guys up to?" And they said, "Well, we were playing baseball fungo." And then I said, "Well, what's that?" And they said, "Well, each of us has a ball and a fungo bat, and I hit the ball against the wall, and I try and create a shot. Maybe it hits three different walls, and then the guy behind me tries to duplicate the shot with his fungo bat and baseball." No, it was a baseball bocce. That's what they called it, baseball bocce. And so they explained this game to me, and they were ex with some animation, with considerable enthusiasm. And after I left, and I said, "Well, this is really a story, because how do you kill all the hours when you're a coach and you got nothing to do? I mean, these guys know how to play baseball. You're not really coaching them at the major league level, saying, 'Well, let me help you learn how to hit a curveball.' If you don't know how to hit a curveball, he's not going to be in the major leagues to begin with. And so how do they kill the time? What do they do?" And this was the answer. They played baseball bocce, and I love that story. Nobody else told it, so it was great fun.
So that you just happened to fall into, which was
Yeah,
great.
exactly.
Well, what about research for your stories for that, for Only a Game?
Well, a lot of times research, it was more like just keeping your eyes open. For example, there's a guy who lives in Needham, where I used to live, named Jim Hirsch. He wrote a wonderful biography of Reuben Carter, the Hurricane. And so when that book came out, I knew I wanted to talk to Jim, and it turned out he was doing a tour with Reuben, and I got to meet Reuben Carter, and I talked to him several times. And That turned out to be one of the more profound and important conversations I ever had with anybody. But some people might have seen that that book had come out, and they might have thought, well, who the hell wants to read a book about a boxer? I knew Jim was a terrific writer. I knew enough about Reuben Carter's story to think it would be a good story. And that was something that enabled us at Only a Game to do something, do a story that had something to do with justice and injustice, as well as obviously sports.
I'm going to ask you to think a moment and pick your favorite sports writer of all time, not just baseball.
Gee, that's a tough one. I mean, there's a number of good ones. Breslin writing about Runyon in his biography of Damon Runyon doesn't get too much better than that. His story about Damon Runyon's adventures writing about baseball, that's pretty good. I liked It Looked Like Forever and those novels a lot. What's
Those are the
the
Harris novels.
yeah the Mark Harris novels. I like all of them. I thought they were, as far as fiction goes, I thought they were probably as good as any and better than most. I like Shoeless Joe. It was kind of fun. Enjoyed it. The Kinsella novel.
And Prospect was compared with Shoeless Joe and For Love of the Game. That's on the blurb of the paperback version.
Yeah, would have been nice if it had sold like Shoeless Joe.
Are you working on anything now?
Well, I'm working on trying to sell a novel that I wrote called Jack Miller's Tale, which is actually set in college basketball. And I don't know if you remember or knew of this, 20 odd years ago out at Duquesne University, some of the basketball players on the team, men's basketball team, were shot. And I went out to Pittsburgh and interviewed some of the players and the coach and some other people who were involved in that, and followed the story for some years. And eventually it occurred to me that the story of college athletes being shot, in this case, by high school kids, offered an opportunity to say something not only about the kind of empty promise of pro sports as a career for most people who accept the bait on that, but also racism and poverty and all kinds of things, because this was all stuff that I saw in that story. So I ended up writing a novel, as I say, called Jack Miller's Tale, about that, and that's what I'm trying to sell now, but so far I haven't found a publisher for it.
We wish you good luck with that.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
One of the favorite features of Only a Game was your poems.
Oh, well, thank you. You're very kind to call them poems. I generally
What
call them
would you call
doggerel.
them?
Doggerel.
I was
They
that was the first word
rhyme.
that came to my mind, but I wasn't sure if that was accurate.
They
But
do rhyme.
I always enjoy, and unlike I listen to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and there's a feature there about the limerick.
Right.
And one of the things that bothers me about that is, strictly speaking, a lot of them are not limericks. They don't
That's
follow
right.
form. But you always seem to follow whatever form you were using, or always fit perfectly.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Is there, am I remembering, is there a collection of those?
There are a bunch of them in a book called Only a Game, and there are a bunch of them in a collection called Keepers, which came out much earlier from Peninsula Press. And if you can find that, it'll be in the rare book, 50 cent bin by this point. But yeah, there are a bunch of them out there.
Well, I'm certainly going to be looking for that. Bill Littlefield, I want to thank you very much for talking with us today. Recommend Prospect, recommend Fall Classic, and good luck. Stay warm.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.